Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club. And here we go.
I'm recording this, getting in line at the Costco gas line. I get it. It's wasting 10 to 15 minutes a month. I honestly don't know why I do it, but a lot of you guys do this too. Recovering cheapo, and try to move out of the scarcity mindset into the abundance mindset. But here I am sitting in Costco gas line, wasting my time. But I'm aware of it, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. But on today's podcast, I'm going to be interviewing a very famous Japanese financial author, Ken Honda. He sold over 9 million copies of his book. And we're going to be talking about the mindset of money, being happy with your money, getting into some of the archetypes, and you can identify which one is you. We're going to be talking about the family dynamics of money, and if you have kids, how it kind of plays into the way that you raise them. On the deal front, we've been taking a look at different projects. The team is actually going out this next week out to the East Coast to take a look at some new deals. Looks great on paper, but until you walk the properties and see the units and see the comps, you can't really put that stamp of approval on it. So those of you guys who are in the investor club, maybe you'll start to see this come out in the next several weeks. If you guys are wanting to get access to that, you can go to thewealthelevator.com/club. That's a real estate project there. That's definitely a very rare one. We haven't really done a significant real estate project since the summer of 2022. But the numbers are starting to make sense, right? Because across the country, you're looking at discounts of 15 to 50% off of what it was a couple of years ago. So if you're a new investor, this is an amazing time to get in. And this is why we're starting to see what's out there. If you've been added to the newsletter, you've been seeing some other tidbits and other videos that I've put up. I've got another one I'll put out in the newsletter this week of seeking alpha outside of the world of real estate, buying businesses. Real estate is the way I grow my net worth. Took me a long time to do it. But there are other deals out there around me on my level where people are starting to look outside of the world of real estate into private equity, venture capital. Just to give you a tangible example of something that I've haphazardly looked at the other week. If you guys are familiar with Amazon, KDP, people who sell books on there, there's a lot of operators who sell books on Amazon and they'll have huge libraries of books that they'll create with a ghostwriter. And they'll make seven figures doing this. One thing that kind of comes to mind is like romance novels. Who would have thought, right? I don't read romance novels. But believe it or not, a lot of these people who do this, take romance novels, the person who actually does them is not a girl, it's a guy. Which kind of speaks to the process that these books or these other creative assets are being created is through a very standard process with a team of writers. And it's very similar to, I've actually had a conversation with another guy who would make low-level movies where it's just the repeatable story again and again. These are definitely not blockbuster movies. You can just get decent writers and decent actors to come and play them, and it sells. Definitely no Marvel movie, definitely nothing that you're going to see in theaters, but it pays the bills. And more importantly, like a repeatable process. So very similar to buying a class B boring apartment complex. And if you think about it, when you syndicate capital and you turbocharge and put it into a proven process like that, then now you're cooking. Because if you've seen the saying before of money is a magnifier, it magnifies something that is working and also things that don't or bad deals. But when you plug it into the right system and also the right operator, good things can happen. And this is what private equity does, where it goes into the right areas and where you're able to cut out the middlemen. So these are kind of the things that I'm looking for out there myself. And this whole idea of looking for things that other people aren't even aware of, or there's very low noise about it. Like crypto, for example, or altcoins or Dogecoin. Like everybody's talking about that. And I want to stay away from that type of world. I want to do things that not a lot of people are even aware about. It also goes to operators, right? Like I want to work with high-level operators that are horrible at marketing. Those are oftentimes the best people to invest with. We're actually tinkering around with the idea of doing like a deal desk. A lot of you guys will send me deals of the same operators, these sub-billion-dollar operators and less, that are just really good at marketing, but they haven't done anything yet. This is where we are able to pull the data from CoStar, Yardi, and vet the operator and their past performance in projects. I see you guys send me all these track record sheets of all these people. It's all fake. It's just, they're just maybe the past investor in some of those deals. In fact, check out the newsletter. We'll have some videos on different investments that you might not have thought of outside of the world of real estate, such as content, websites, stuff like that, just to expand the horizon. I always say real estate is a great place to get started because it's very tangible. A lot of us have owned rental properties or lived in apartments in the past, but this is the trend, right? And I think this trend has been exacerbated by high interest rates. Last thing I'd like to put out there for those of you guys who've recently retired and like to share your story, let us know. Reach out to team at thewealthelevator.com. We can make you anonymous. But I think I really like to gather this whole idea of moving from scarcity to just living your life, being free. Sure, you might be going to Costco, getting your gas, saving 10, 20 bucks there. But it's nice to hear people who've taken that leap of faith and downgraded their income or cut their income source altogether and realize that they have enough. And how did they get there? Of course. But to really tap into the mindset, which we're going to dig into today's podcast.
We have an author guest today, Ken Honda, who wrote the book Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money. He's been a best-selling finance and personal development author in Japan, and now bringing over a lot of his information and ideas over to America. He's surpassed 7 million copies since 2001. We're taking a break off of syndications and taxes, a lot of the hardcore finance stuff, this kind of angle. What I would also suggest is we have a new spinoff podcast called The Rich Life Podcast, where we get a little bit more into the personal development side, the mindset side, that you can check out on iTunes, Google Play. And I guess a lot of people are listening to these podcasts on the YouTube. So if you go on our YouTube channel, you can check out on the playlist section that new Rich Life Podcast there. We're going to get into a lot of these money personality types. So I thought it would be more appropriate to put on our Wealth Elevator podcast and then obviously tie this in. And how much money do you need to be happy? Or what I always say is when enough is enough. But yeah, thanks for jumping on, Ken. Really appreciate you being on.
Thank you, Lane. I'm so excited to be here. I have a friend whose name is Kawaoka. So wow, like you're maybe like a distant cousin of his.
You probably are. There's not too many of us.
Yeah.
You've been writing a lot on this sort of topic, and you've got a great viewpoint on money and happiness. Why don't we just start off at the top? What is the idea of happy money versus unhappy money?
So I realized about 30 years ago, I met a lot of wealthy people, and I realized there are two kinds of people, happy wealthy people and unhappy wealthy people. Some of you may think like rich people are bad because some of them are very mean, but you probably haven't met some very good people with money. And I realized I became very close to them because I was a tax advisor and all that. And I realized that people with a happy attitude, they have what I call happy money. Happy money comes in when you do the work you love. And then as a result of happy smiles, you receive money. On the other hand, most of us are in the flow of unhappy money, which means that we are making money by doing what we don't like to bring food on the table, or do some shady business and get money or almost steal money from people. That money is not happy money because when you receive it, you feel funny energy. You feel squeezed or feel bad. When we spend, we don't want to pay taxes. I don't want to pay bills. And then you feel, the money is neutral, but it's up to you. If you're a bad person, you just make your money unhappy. And if you're a very nice and generous person, you make the flow of happy money. So that is the difference.
A lot of people here have to work their day jobs, or if they're working in their business, on their business, you're in that unhappy mode. But there's a lot of people that might have side gigs, just doing things because of the money.
Yes.
Some people like doing these short-term rentals these days, and they don't really care for it. They're just doing it for the money. That would be an example of unhappy money, right?
Yes. And when you receive money, if that makes you smile and happy, that's happy money. When you feel like you grab the money and run, and that's unhappy money.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, like, why do we keep podcasting the YouTube channel? I always say it's like the concept of ikigai.
Yeah.
You know, do something you like, you are good at, you enjoy, and good for the world, and you can monetize it. I've been getting more into the YouTube world, and they have this saying where it's like, you have to crack the algorithm, and 60% of the stuff you should be doing because you enjoy it and you like to talk about the topics. Mm-hmm. And the other 40%, you have to placate to the algorithm and do. For me, it's like talking about the Roth IRA, super basic stuff. I hate talking about that stuff. There's balance here, right? You have to do certain things and get unhappy money to eventually have enough. Is that kind of the idea, Ken? Like a means to the end?
Yeah, thank you, Lane. I always think of two circles, what I want to do and what society wants you to do. And you don't have to bend yourself and do what you don't want to do. But there are like so many things that you can do. And out of all the things, you can do the things that please a lot of people too. Without compromising yourself, you can focus on what you love. And what's interesting is that like when I started writing books, author is a very interesting thing. There are two kinds of authors. Authors who just write what they would love to do, they don't care about the readers. They don't care if the books would sell. And they could become a best-selling author or just they die out because nobody buys their books. And the other kind is they always enjoy writing things and people love it. I'm that kind of author. So I focused on the things I really love to write. And also I write what everybody wants to read. That's why my book sales are now 9 million copies. And so it's been, 4 or 5 years? So every year I sell about 500,000 copies. And the reason why I could do that is that I keep providing information that people love. You don't need to bend yourself. You don't need to change yourself in order to please people. You just be yourself, but find the area that you can do best at. And then people will love you. There's always something that you love to enjoy doing. And then people love you. So find a spot.
For me and for business owners, hopefully you get to a point where you're not in survival mode and you can do what may or may not make money. Maybe focusing on our average listener here is working a high six-figure day job. They're good at it and they've been doing it for quite some time. Eventually, especially when they start implementing a lot of these strategies, they'll get to a place of financial freedom. But I feel like a lot of people are in this mode of it's a little bit binary where they are in hustle mode, right? Like just get it done, like rushing all over the place. And then they think when they hit a certain number net worth, then they switch to happy money, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe give us some tips for that individual. I think we all intellectually understand that you have to transition there slowly and not just go white to black in a way. Mm-hmm. But what are some tips for people to kind of transition over?
There are just two mountains. This mountain is do what you're good at and then go through the mountain of what you love. Because like doctors, lawyers, and those that kind of occupation, you've been trained to do what you're supposed to do all your life since you're 5. But in life, there are like two ways of living. Do what you love or do what you're told to do. So a lot of people are trying to follow somebody's orders. You're working for somebody else. But if your attitude is like that, you never figure out what you want to do. So while you're doing what others want you to do and make money, you have to figure out ways to live on your own. Either way, you have to figure out how you can transition that. And there are so many people writing blogs about their life and YouTubers who have done what they love now. But before that, you really have to find your passion. Unless you find your passion and you cannot keep going, you get depressed if you keep doing what you're good at and you don't enjoy. So you have to really change the course of your life. And then realistically, you have to come up with numbers, years, how many years do you want to take? I think it should take at least 3 to 5 years, potentially 10 years to achieve financial independence. So don't try to go take a shortcut. Because usually if you try to go for a shortcut, And then some people try to invest in the currency and they end up losing a lot of money because they don't have the enough financial IQ. And also what I teach, emotional financial EQ, money IQ, money EQ, both are very important. So unless you have those, you cannot really transition because in the process, you feel scared and you have to keep going. If you have low money EQ, you're scared, you stop, you sell. So that's why a lot of people lose. So you have to understand that kind of dynamics as well.
So maybe this is already identifying this that scared mentality here where a guy or gal is making a great salary. And we often call this the golden handcuffs. They're stuck there. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, maybe they're a specialist in a big company like Apple or Facebook. Yeah. And they can't really take their services elsewhere nor start a business. So what are you suggesting there?
So there must be something that you are good at and help people. So you have to find your tribe. There are a lot of people, but you haven't met them. That's the only thing. So I think it's almost go on a journey to find your tribe. So to do that, you have to put up a smoke signal, like Native American people. And by putting up a smoke signal, your tribe will see you. And then, wow, that's somebody I was looking for. I've been going around the world a few times and I came back from US, but I'm going to Europe now in a week or so. What I realized is that there are so many people who've seen my smoke signal, you know, a book called Happy Money, and they realize that their relationship with money has to be changed and they come to see me. So you have to put up a smoke signal of some kind and then you'd be amazed how many people you can help. And I started this 22 years ago, and I thought nobody wants to read my book. Oh, at least I didn't have any confidence. But I was so surprised that as I wrote my books, a lot of people responded. So there may be some people who love what you do. And then you don't have to prove yourself. You just put up a smoke signal. This is who I am. This is Lane, you know, Kawaoka. And then people say, wow, then that's that guy I was looking for. So you have to be found, not just you go out there.
I think what kind of comes to mind there is we've talked about it in past podcasts where the difference between being goal-oriented, which is what we're all taught to do, right? What Asian parents have not guided their kids to do well in school, get a good job, get a certain amount of money, but that's very outcome-based, goals-oriented. And I think what I'm suggesting and what I'm hearing you say is take more of a value-oriented approach. Did you try hard? Did you do something that maybe didn't come easy, but you applied yourself and you had some resonance frequency doing it? It's like the way I look at a lot of the stuff that you teach. We'll circle at the end, kids and money, right? We'll get to there. But just like investments or businesses, you never know if you're going to be successful. Just can you write a book, right? There could have been 50 other writers better than you that pour their heart, soul, and tears on a book and nobody reads it. The saying, nobody knows, nobody cares, but is just because they didn't hit their goal, does that mean they're a failure? I don't know. That's your life, right?
Yes. Don't try to just judge your life by numbers, especially North American people tie their self-worth with a net worth. That is a shortcut to unhappiness. Because if you think reaching $1 million goal, it is great. But after you reach 1 million, there are friends who have $3 million. And then once you reach, there are people with 10. And then when you just reach about $10 million, then you just happen to get to know people who have private jets. There's no end to it. And so that's why I'm teaching people how to figure out your money container size. We are all born with a certain money container size. Don't try to grow it fast or quick. A lot of people do. That's why they end up losing everything. So you have to understand how much is enough, when is enough. Otherwise, you lose a peace of mind. Like for me, I don't think I'm going to be a billionaire in my lifetime, but I'm just content and I have more than enough for the rest of my life. I'm just more about sharing mode. So once you just know what is the limit, how much is enough, you find financial peace.
And also recognize we are creatures of habit. So it's pretty easy even for people who are very aware to compare themselves with their peer group and others. That's why I try to find broke friends. So I don't keep constantly trying to go for the Joneses. But let's switch into a little bit more personal finance. Sure. You have some different person types here, compulsive savers, sure, compulsive spenders, mm-hmm, the money makers, the indifferent to money types. Maybe that's a lot of our spouses that aren't listening, mm-hmm, to this podcast. Hippies, the save splurgers, the gamblers. So there's about 7 of these. Of course, people got to go read the book to get more into it. But maybe talk about like how you use this framework.
Yeah. So I was at the conference table with a deceased family. Our client was a business owner, and then the wife and 3 kids were in the room to just talk about the inheritance taxes. And I realized that there are 3 kids. Nobody was adopted, but they look so different. The first child is a guy who looked like a Wall Street type, short cut, nice suit. And the second one is a daughter. She wears like a Gap, very casual, no jewelry, very simple. And then the third one is a total hippie. He had piercing in. He looks like a surfer, like me, long hair and just like, what's up, dude, type of guy. And then, wait a second, these 3 kids are born and brought up in the same household? Wow. And they seem to have a totally different lifestyle. And I realized when I ask around my friends, none of us have the exact same brothers and sisters. Our siblings are different. And then I came up with this idea. Wow. So there are money personality types. And then I just observe people. There are savers who love saving. There are money makers. They love money making. I think your listeners are like that. And also, some of them must be a gambler. They just do a high leverage investment. They make a lot of money and then they lose it all. And also, they're a warrior. If you're listening or watching, your spouse could be that. Worry about money all the time. And also, money different in different type. They're not interested in money. They are like housewives or school teachers or public servants. Those people, they tend to pay a little attention to money. There are many type of people, personality-wise, and none of them are wrong or right. But the funny thing is, the opposite type gets attracted to, and they end up getting married. And the same reason that they got together could be the same reason for divorce. Because saver and moneymaker, they are attracted to each other. Because the moneymaker, like these people, think like they have this stability. And also, once they get married, like the moneymaker people think people are so boring. And the same thing goes with a spender. If you are hanging around with a spender, they make the best date. They know how to enjoy life. So they take you to the nicest restaurant, order expensive ones. They bring roses. But after getting married, it sounds like everything is a waste of money. You have to understand each other. So unless you understand each other, you're likely to blame one another for making mistake, because whatever you do could be a big mistake for the other people.
You bring up the couple's dynamic. So out of this list, I think the most common one out of our investor profiles are the compulsive savers. Uh-huh. And then most of the people, I would say, fall in that category, but we do have a lot of business owners. So those are the money makers category, and they're typically married to someone who is an indifferent or that compulsive spender. But sometimes, maybe you can explain this, like-minded people attract too. I've seen it where they're both compulsive savers too.
But you know, among the compulsive savers, the one is more spender than the other. They're both very stingy. The funny thing is the other one always looks like you're wasting our money. So it's just a comparison.
Do you say out of this framework that some people can have a primary and secondary? Because sometimes I see myself, yes, like in my younger, yes, days, I was like a saver, but mm-hmm, then now I'm that saver splurge kind of,
yes,
guy.
So generationally, it's very interesting because you may start being a saver and then boom, you just completely off the chart too, and you become a spender. And then you just file bankruptcy and then you just go back to saver again and a gambler. And so I'm just talking about this personality types as a model. So you're not the saver. Part of me is a gambler. Part of me is a spender. Part of me is a saver. Part of me is a money maker. So we all have these archetypes in us.
And this also applies to like our kids, right? Their own personality, yes, types. And going back to your story, there. Like, maybe talk a little bit about, like, we have a lot of people who are in their 40s and 50s listening, and they've got maybe teenage kids, older kids. Maybe is it wise to start to fit them into this framework that you have?
Yes, because kids tend to be rebellious to the parents. That means they try to go to the opposite side. And the obedient kids want to be the same type with their parents. So if both of your parents are saver type, your kids are likely to end up being a spender because they hate being in boredom. They don't want a boring life with just clipping coupons and stuff. You have to just give them money teachings. If you go this path, this is what you get. And so I have a different prescription to different personality types. But for spenders, you have to understand that you need to have more security and structure. For savers, you have to understand that life is to be enjoyed, not for the security. You don't work for the rainy days or after retirement. You may die before you retire. So you have to understand how money works in your life.
Yeah, I think just sharing as a data point, my parents are both very much savers. And I'm a rebellious kid. I still am. And maybe thankfully, because they invested in the mutual fund stuff and financial planners. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. So maybe that's what pushed me in the opposite direction. But I do notice, I definitely, like, whenever we went out, we rarely went to restaurants. So I love going to restaurants today as an adult. I see that as a big splurge. But then it's this concept of maybe my kids will be savers, probably the hippie. Yeah. Let's talk about the hippie. What do we do about that kid, right?
So, like, they want to stay away from capitalism. So they may end up being in Bali, like they like tropical islands. So you may be born in Hawaii, but you tend to go toward more hippie side. So it's automatic from my eyes, but for them, they think they're just making life choices on their own. So you have to understand that we have been controlled by this many personality types because we become who we are, and because the position in our house 30 years ago, if all the seats are taken, maybe being a warrior could be the only seat left for you. And that's why you may worry about life, worry about money, worry about relationships all the time, because you're driven to be that way. So this goes deeper than just many personality types. It's almost how you live your life is being predestined because of your brothers and sisters a certain way. So you're forced to become who you are now, without knowing. So once you just go deeper into your childhood and look at money issues, you'll be amazed what kinds of things will be revealed in front of your eyes.
Yeah, I like that idea of the untaken seat. Must be Japanese. If I'm correct me if I'm like reading into this, these seven personality types, but I'm imagining one of these like seven axis charts where you have the saver and spender on opposite ends of the spectrum. The money maker and the hippie are the bipolar opposites. The gambler and indifferent are the opposites. Then the saver splurgers of bipolar kid, right? And that's actually me. But is that in a way, that's how it is, right? And
yes, but how you look at yourself also comes from a money personality. I don't think you're a splurger. You're just no person who enjoy eating out. But from a money saver's perspective, that looks like wasting your money. I think you, even though you are more normal in a sense, but your eyes are more saver type, judging yourself that you're just wasting your money. That money could be saved for future investment. This voice comes from your parents. But it's so interesting how we judge ourselves.
And these are the stories that we make up in our head, or the narratives. The narrative that I've always made up for myself is my parents are savers and I want to rebel against them. But then I'm like, if I don't save my money and be financially free, I'm going to have to follow what those suckers tell me to my dying age or when they pass away. So I'll be damned if that. So I think that's been the external motivation to save my money. Despite what makes them happy.
I know. So like, we like it or not, we've been controlled by the situations. But we can take different paths. For us saver people, the biggest limitation is that there's certain money. So the sense of scarcity is there. So you cannot imagine that your income can grow. So you can spend as much money, but still a lot of money will be left. That's not the idea for savers. Savers are living under the same income. So if you just let go of the idea that you have a certain limit, and then your ceiling, it will be taken away. Like when I was in my 20s, my mentor said very interesting thing to me. Just decide how much you're going to earn for the rest of your life. What? At the time, I think if you work for a big company, you are working all your life from 20 to 60, and then you end up making about $3 million. So he said, it's almost like you spent 40 years making $3 million, or just do something and then you can make $3 million in 1 year. So all those 40 years, and then retire, the same thing. What do you want? And I decided to do the money making in my 20s. That's how I could retire at the age 29. He also used a metaphor. If you go to a dentist, do you want your teeth be pulled out in 40 years or in 1 second? So that you want to make all the money, you could do it in 1 year, which I'm doing. I'm making more money than an average person makes an entire life. So that means that if you just condense your money-making ability, and if you make no money for 39 years, but make a lot of money for the last year, you can enjoy your whole life doing nothing for 39 years and work 1 year, you earn the same amount of money. Just forget about the taxes for now. But that's how he taught me and in my early 20s. So think about that. Like, how many years are you going to spend on making money for how much? You understand the big picture? Unless you change the rules of money game, you will keep losing, because money games are not designed to make you feel good. Money games are designed to make you feel bad about everything you do.
I mean, kind of in our early days of our community, we would have a lot of more younger people book calls with me. We brought in some non-accredited investors at that time, and they're in their 20s. And today it's mostly guys in their 40s to 60s. But what I would coach the younger people was that, or at least like my viewpoint on the way I look at the world, is work hard at first, then relax, right? Which is, I think, is the traditional way. More and more people, especially millennials and Gen Zs, are a little bit more, I think, what you're suggesting. That kind of, and then you got the guys who are like my age, 40s and over, who are like, I already dug my grave already with this, right? Shoot, I'm already locked in. The unfortunate truth. But maybe speak to that sad predicament. Now a lot of people listening are aware of it. But what do we do about it? Like, we're in our mid-40s, we're in our 50s. We've been doing it this way for 2 or 3 decades. What are some small steps to take to get some quick wins?
Yeah, so I think the easy and simple one is appreciate your money in your life. My mentor, who's called Warren Buffett of Japan, Wahei Takeda, who said, arigato, your money is the first step. Thank your money for being in your life. So after you start thanking your money, arigato, your money, for coming in and going out, you can enjoy money. You can appreciate money being in your life. So, you know, what you appreciate, appreciates. So once you start thanking your money, and then make money your friend, not your enemy. And once money is on your side, you feel like, wow, I didn't know money is such a nice person. And then money can make your dreams come true. Money bought me my retreat center or my dream, so we can host 60 people and just go dive into the depth of life uninterrupted by anybody. And then I just keep achieving dreams because money is on my side to help me. So money can create miracles more than 100 times. So money is a great thing if you let it. Just learning about money is the most important thing. And then as you deal with money, just check out your feelings too. Why do you have negative feelings around money? And once you let go of the money wounds in your life, you transform your relationship with money. And if you do those things, you feel calmer in your life and you can make a good decision about what you're supposed to do. Because life is not about work and investment. That is also important. But why you do that? It's to have security. It's to have more options. Don't sacrifice your life for it. You enjoy your life and then make money on the side. So that way, you're not wasting any minute. You're just enjoying your life. And that activities will bring in money. You have to change the paradigm in your head about money and work. That's how I'm helping people. Transform their relationship first, And then you can start building a new relationship with money.
My experience share on this, my first working and decade in career, even in investing, was very tight-fisted, like very scarcity-minded. It's that people have heard the analogy of the badger who sticks his hand in the hole and he doesn't let go of what he's holding. He can't get his dang hand out and they come up and smack him on behind the head. In a way, that was like me. And I see a lot of people like that who they hold on to their money, right? They think I make 20 grand a year, I make 30 grand a year, and they can't really get it back out there and invest in investments. Or my whole transition to entrepreneurship myself is when my late 20s, I would spend a lot of money on these stupid like programs where I wouldn't say it was worth it, but it was. And from that, I built this feedback loop in always investing in myself and then, of course, investing in investments, but seeing the money go and building that trust feedback loop that the money came back in multiples. And It's a huge contrast when you meet a lot of people who have multi-million-dollar net worth. They're very loose with their money, but what's hard for a lot of people is like letting go that first time.
Yes.
It's hard.
Yeah. So that's why you have to learn about the money. I'd say the first $100,000 is a ticket to become financially free. And if you want to be wealthy, the first $1 million you make or you keep is almost taken away as a symbol of almost like a membership fee for being wealthy. And then you feel like, oh my God, what happened to my first $1 million? But that is how money works. So by just generating more money, by just letting go, by losing money, and then you can create the new flow. If you hold on to like $50,000 or $100,000 and do nothing, nothing happens. So you have to just let the currency flow. So current meaning and the flow. So you just need to create more ability. It's almost like a pumping ability to just pump up more money so you can suck the money energy and then pump up. So you just by letting the money come in and go easily, you will lose fear along the way because the money keeps coming in, like breathing. So next time you worry about money, breathe in and breathe out. When you worry about money, when you spend your money, it's almost like worrying about air after you breathe out. Do you think I can sneeze, breathe in more air? We don't worry about it because it's so natural. It's everywhere. Money is like that. Money is everywhere. It's that you don't know how to get it. You don't know how to let it flow.
It's tough though. Like I said, I was in this space until I had almost a dozen rental properties. And even then I was pretty tight-fisted. The key is getting around other like-minded, ideally high net worth investors. And that way you start to help each other get around getting past this stuff.
Yeah. So that's why I said, find your own tribe. For those who are listening in, it's laying Kawaoka tribe. You're forming your own tribe, just helping one another. That's what's so beautiful about the community. So once you just know that you're in the right community, become friends with them, just support one another. That's how we grow. So I think that's what finding your friends and a tribe is very important.
Let me transition here. And the wrap up topic is a lot of folks have families, a lot of folks have kids. I got a 3-year old. And I just know, Ken, because I'm, what was I out of your list here? The compulsive moneymaker. You called me the compulsive moneymaker. My daughter will most likely be a hippie.
Or money indifferent. Could be a spender. Daddy, can I?
She ain't going to get money. I'm an engineer. I can put controls in place to prevent that. Maybe talk a little bit about your own experience with your family and kids and maybe we'll leave that as a data point for folks.
Yes, anybody's different. And also, I think financial education is very interesting because there are only two kinds of money education. You teach your kids to be a nice worker. So they almost like a training to become an employee working for somebody else. And a lot of education is focused on become better at what you do, like a doctor, a lawyer, accountant, that kind of thing. Or just what you work for a big corporation. That's one way of doing it. And the other one is to teach your kids to be free. And education is totally different because you have to think on your own. You have to understand how money works. And what I taught my daughter is not just about the money. It's about how to be creative and how to have a good relationship with people. I think she has both. She's a professional singer. She's going to do very well because she has enough fan base and also she knows what to do. don't teach kids about money because money is a result of what you do or who you are. Teach them what you want them to be. If you want them to be a free person, you have to teach different things than study hard, go to good school. But even if you try to teach investment, unless you can teach them the importance of money, they will not listen to you. Because your kids would say, Dad, Mom, you're so boring. You talk about money. I'm not into it. You're just pushing your kids to money different type. So they end up being working in a low-paying job or they try to be a nice worker. So you have to understand how money works. And then you have to look at your kid's personality type. By the age 6 or 7, I can figure out who they're going to be because the way they use their allowances, it's so funny. Like they already have the archetype already set up in them.
I agree with what you're saying. I like the idea of having that freeness, right? They don't need to be a doctor, computer programmer, engineer to get the salary. Why? Because quite frankly, we got like life insurance that'll pay out 5% and a lot of it. So they'll be fine, right? I got that box checked for them. That's our thing. But I think there's other external motivators these days with all the kids announcing where they're going to college for vanity metrics. I'm not a huge fan of college, but this idea of freeness, but balancing that with do something for the world, have it aligned with Ikigai. But I don't know, that's just esoteric theory for me because that's not an experience shared. So there's a big difference between theories and what's on podcasts and actually having the experience, but definitely something I emulate, right? That freeness idea. But yeah, if folks want to reach out to kenhonda.com,
yes.
And then on Amazon, the book is called Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money.
Thank you. I just really want you to enjoy money. And by transforming your relationship with money, you can have a totally different life. That's why I wanted to share. And also, my next book is coming out in May. It's called True Wealth. It's about a grandfather leaving no money, but 9 letters to his grandson. So this 20-year-old boy receives a package of letters from his grandfather, and each letter has a title. The first one is Synchronicity. The second one is Decision. And he opens up one letter, and then something happens, and he goes on a journey. So I just put everything I learned from my mentors, all the most important things in life. So follow your synchronicities, find what you love, and find love in your life, and enjoy money. That's what I wanted to share. So thank you, Lane, for inviting me.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Good concept. It's like how if people have read The Go-Giver, I think Conversations with God is like that same concept. Yeah. That's the wrap for this week's show, folks. Check out kenhonda.com and pick up the book. If you guys have any other suggestions for any other guests in this kind of arena, let us know. We will obviously get back to some of the more hardcore finance, tax, legal, infinite banking, investment stuff next week. But for now, leave us a 5-star review. We can get great authors like Ken here. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.